Welcome to the Commercial Investing Show, where we analyze, explain, and exploit the opportunities presented in today's commercial property marketplace. If you're interested in apartments, mobile home parks, self-storage facilities, and other income property, you've come to the right place. We'll explore what's hot and what's not in markets nationwide in the relentless pursuit of return on investment. Here's your host, Jason Hartman.
Welcome to the Commercial Investing Show. This is your host, Jason Hartman, and we talk about the relentless pursuit of ROI, return on investment, and how you can make your money work for you. Today, we're going to talk about the path of the investor. One of our investment counselors, Tim, is in the office with me, and we're going to just go over how someone progresses through their investment life. I've been in the real estate business for many years, and I've seen people climb from just doing a few little residential rental properties on up to maybe some apartments, a small mobile home park, whatever, and build a real estate empire over the years just by being persistent, tenacious, by following through, by not getting discouraged when they have setbacks, and just sticking with it. And it's really amazing how we can create tremendous wealth through our income property investments. So today, again, we'll talk about the path of the investor, how an investor progresses through their life cycle of investing, and how they move up to larger and larger deal sizes and really create wealth through their income properties. Our next shows, we'll talk about mobile home park investing, which is just interesting and phenomenal, and self-storage investing as well. We're also going to have a guest talk about apartment investing. So stick with us on the Commercial Investing Show, where we're going to cover a lot of these great topics. We're going to cover monetary policy and inflation, a lot of interesting things there to talk about how you can really make your investments work for you in today's rather uncertain times. Welcome to the Commercial Investing Show, where we talk about real estate investing in the most historically proven wealth creator, and that is income property. But most specifically on this show, we really kind of focus on apartments, mobile home parks, and self-storage facilities. At this time, we think those are really where the best opportunities are. Of course, in other markets, in other times, we may be talking about office space or retail centers or industrial properties or specialty use properties. But right now, we really like the apartment, mobile home park, and self-storage asset class is the best. And I'm here with one of our investment counselors, and that is Tim. And Tim is here to talk to me today about the path of a real estate investor. And some of you listening may have gotten your start in residential property investing. You bought a couple of rental properties and fixed them up and rented them out or flipped them and kind of worked your way up from there. And now you may wanting to see how to get into larger asset classes and really make it big. So Tim, welcome. It's great to be talking about this topic. And really, this topic was your idea, so I thank you for that.
Thanks for your kind words. It's great to be here. Looking forward to many more of these.
We're going to cover some exciting stuff on our main show, the Creating Wealth Show, which has been around for so many years. We've got a huge following, and that's been great. And we have covered investing in some of the larger properties and the other asset classes. But the primary focus of that show is really on the residential type property investor. But as we've discussed him, and I've experienced personally over the last couple of years, once you get up to about 20 houses, it gets pretty hard to manage all those little houses, because you have a separate insurance policy in each one, a separate mortgage on each one, a separate tenant in each one, and it just gets a little complicated. It gets a little easier when you buy a mobile home park with 150 units in it, or a self-storage facility with 220 units, or an apartment building with 35 units, or whatever the numbers are.
It's a natural progression for a real estate investor. I'd say the vast majority of us get started buying houses and buying small properties, and eventually we get to the point where we have a portfolio that's a handful. Could be a number of reasons. It could just be that there are too many properties to manage them all together, or it could be that you've run out of loans. But at some point, most people will start thinking about that next step, and that next step for most people is usually multifamily.
Yeah, I agree. So when you say multifamily, you're really talking about apartments then?
Yeah, apartments. I also consider mobile home parks to be part of multifamily.
I'll agree with that. So what does someone do to make the jump? Like, what's the typical sort of progression? Is it someone who owns 8, 12 houses and then decides, hey, I'm going to buy an apartment building? What deal size are they looking at? Is it something that's like maybe $1 million or $1.2 million and it's got 40 units, something in that genre?
Yeah, I would say that most people start in somewhere between 16 and 50 units, just because usually at that point, if they're just getting into commercial, they're not heavily capitalized, and it's the easiest way to get started in the commercial side.
So when they start, Tim, is it something that you find an investor does better just doing it themselves? Well, it's one of the great things about income property investing is you have control. You're not in a position where you've got to leave it to some crooked Wall Street fund manager or CEO or board of directors. Or should they get in and maybe learn by doing it with an experienced partner?
Well, you know, you're going to pay for your education one way or the other. I've always said that it's always cheaper to get your education up front than to get educated as you go along. Oftentimes what people will do is they will partner with somebody who's done it before, somebody who knows what they're doing. I think it's important to point out that there is a significant difference between residential investing, which we consider 1 to 4 unit properties, and the commercial side. A couple of things that you're going to need to know. The first thing is the way that properties are evaluated. In housing, you can have two houses in the exact same neighborhood. One might be rented for $1,200 a month. One might be rented for $1,500 a month. The difference in the valuation, those houses are probably going to be worth the exact same amount if they're very similar houses. It doesn't matter if you've planted flowers in your house and in front of your house and the next person hasn't. Your house is going to be worth what the other houses in that neighborhood are worth because it's all based on comparables.
So residential real estate, even if it's an income property, and we're talking about 4 units and under, right?
Yes.
Is sold on the basis of comparison, where commercial properties are sold either or priced on the basis of income or highest and best use, right?
Right. And that, I think, is the real benefit of commercial real estate, is that you don't have to wait for the market to drive the value of your property up. If you can be better at managing that property and you can increase the bottom line, what we call the net operating income of that property, you're increasing the value of that property. Commercial properties are valued based on cap rates. And what a capitalization rate is it's the net operating income that property produces. That's all the income minus all of the expenses except for your debt service. So it's the amount of money that you would have to keep if you own that property free and clear. That number divided by the purchase price. That's how you come up with a cap rate. The higher the cap rate, the better the cash flow. A lot of times, the higher the cap rate, sometimes the more challenges are in the property. But that is how a commercial property, a multifamily property, is valued. So if you can either increase your income or decrease your expenses, you're increasing the value of the property. It's what we call forced appreciation.
Forced appreciation. So that's good. You really have the opportunity to add value then. I think that's one of the key points we want to talk about when people want to consider moving from the traditional residential property to commercial property in any sort, is adding value. That's a
Correct.
Key component. But one of the things I love about the residential property investments is that they're just less institutionalized, and it's sort of illogical. It's a more imperfect market. And when it's that way, when you get into one of these frenzied markets that we seem to come into every 7 years or so, and you have crazy, illogical, unsustainable, I might add, bubble. And then in that kind of market, you can really do well as kind of a speculator, which is risky, but if you time it right, if you're an expert, if you have good advice, you can do well, but mostly people don't. So I don't even want to go there.
Well, residential timing is very critical. You do make your money when the market appreciates, and knowing when that appreciation is taking place, I think, is the key. In commercial, you make your own appreciation. So you, even in a market that's not moving, you can have appreciation in commercial. For example, if you have a building, let's say you have an apartment building that generates $800,000 a year of gross operating income. That's if every unit was rented. But let's say 25% of your property, when you buy it, 25% of your property is not rented, and you have $300,000 a year of expenses. Well, that gives you a net of about $300,000 a year. And I'll use a 10 cap rate as an example because it's easy to do the numbers. But you have a building that's worth about $3 million. Well, if you can take that building from $600,000 a year in rent to $700,000 a year in rent and your expenses don't go up, now you're netting $400,000 a year. You just made your building worth $1 million more.
So those are some pretty big numbers, say if we're talking about a residential type investor, because this show, unlike some of the other shows that we're doing, this is the path of the investor. This is how someone grows up. So you're talking about $700,000 in rental income?
I don't like to get out of bed for less than $1 million.
Well, hey, I like that philosophy. And Donald Trump probably doesn't get out of bed for less than $100 million. But what kind of property produces that sort of income?
Oh, you know, for me, when I buy an apartment building, I like buildings that have about 100 units. 100 is a good number because one on-site manager can usually manage 100 units. One on-site maintenance person can usually handle 100 units. If you go smaller than that, if you go 40 units, you're probably still going to need to have an on-site manager and an on-site maintenance person, and you're still going to have to pay them the same as if they were managing 100 units. So you get a little bit of a discount by having a few more units. You get what we call economies of scale. It's the same thing as if you owned, I used to own 30 residential properties, a total of 68 doors, and I also had to have 30 different insurance policies, and I had probably 20 different property managers and 40 different mortgages, and it was a lot to manage versus having all of it under one roof is much, much easier. It's much cheaper and much more efficient.
Yeah, you know, the downside, though, is you don't get the diversification. You can't take advantage of one of those illogical markets when they seem to come along every 7 years or so. But for simplicity and portfolio and big empire building, definitely a lot more you can do because you can add value. Can you add value quickly? And when you're looking at adding value, how do you usually really execute on that? It's typically the point of you're finding a tired manager. What I find, someone who's been doing it for 30 years, they don't want to improve the property anymore. They've kind of made their money. They're sort of just done with it. And you can really go in and improve that property and increase rents a lot. Maybe they're being too soft on the tenants, not increasing rents as much as they should. Where do all the adding value opportunities come?
99% of adding value is going to be in better management. You hit it right on the head. Most properties are undervalued because they have been managed poorly. Usually, like you said, it's an owner that's owned the property for a long time, or it was a previous owner that was an absentee owner, didn't give it the attention it needed, didn't manage it properly. When I'm looking for property, I like to look for the worst managed properties in the best areas, because you can fix bad tenants, you can fix bad roofs, you can fix bad parking lots, you can fix bad property management. You cannot fix bad economics. If you're in a bad area, you can spend a lot of money trying to make a property better, and in the end, you may not have increased value that much.
Because the area will only support a certain amount of improvement.
Right. You don't want to be the best property in the worst area.
Yeah.
You want to be the worst. You want to buy the worst property in the best area, and then you want to do whatever you need to do to make it, to bring it up to the level of the other properties in that area. And you can make millions of dollars doing that all day long.
So talk to us about maybe some of the deals you've done and how they've worked in terms of, now these will be apartment buildings in pretty much every case, I know, because that's your background. Tell us about some of them.
Sure. We like to buy properties, like we said, the worst properties in the better parts of town. And we look for properties that have been undermanaged. The first thing that we do is we take a look at what the rents are going for in some of the other buildings, and we can kind of get an idea of what the market will bear. And then we take a look at the building that we're interested in buying and find out and try and determine why isn't that building getting those types of rents. And usually it's because of deferred maintenance, things that need to be fixed on the property. One particular building I bought in Mississippi, it was an 81-unit building. The pool was green. I think there was furniture in the bottom of it. It was hard to tell. The parking lot needed to be done. It looked bad from the road. And it was about $200 a month per unit cheaper than the building right across the street that had just been renovated. So we knew we had some upside potential in that property. And, of course, after we bought it, we actually filled in the pool and made a nice little park. That way there was nobody jumping off the roof into the pool, and the health department wasn't coming out and finding us and that sort of thing. We fixed the security gates so that we had some security. We installed 16 video cameras to add to the security, and then we started cleaning up the units. We put in some water-saving toilets and water-saving shower heads, and that brought our water bill from about $5,000 a month down to about $2,500 a month. That saved us about $30,000 a year and increased the value of the property by about $300,000.
Now, that's interesting. See what you just said there. You saved $30,000, and because the property is a 10 cap, the capitalization rate is 10.
Right.
That turns into a $300,000 increase in value.
Right.
Do you want to elaborate on that a little bit?
Sure, sure. We figured we'd spend about $500 per unit, 81 units, to increase the value of the property by $300,000. And what we did was we put in new toilets and water-saving shower heads in each unit, which saved us about half of our water bills. So our water bills went from $5,000 a month, or about $60,000 a year, down to $30,000 a year. That $30,000 a year savings at a 10 cap rate, if you divide it by 10%, that's $300,000. So we increased the value of our building by $300,000 by doing that.
So that's not the type of adding value that most people would normally, I guess, notice, because what most people think of as adding value is they're going to put some paint, they're going to fix up the building and make it a little nicer. This is an invisible thing, pretty much.
Well, it's what you want to do is you want to first take a look at how do I increase the income, and then you want to take a look at how do I decrease the expenses. So I go in and I also look at the phone bills. I mean, I see phone bills sometimes that are $250 to $500 a month.
You mean just the manager?
Sure.
The on-site manager's phone bill?
Yeah. And all you have to do is get Vonage or something like that.
Or Skype.
Or Skype. Yeah. And you know, all of a sudden your phone bill drops to $69.
There's an example. This is just a little example, but it's important that you think about that. So if you save $150 a month on your phone bill, that's $1,800 a year.
You just increase the value of your building by $18,000. By making one phone call.
Wow. See, that's pretty cool. Absolutely. Okay.
You can't do that in residential.
Yeah, no, you can't do that in residential. I agree with you. So other value-added type of things.
Sure. One of the things that we did was we installed, we made a deal with the cable company. The basic cable was about $50 a month, and I'd say about 80% of our tenants had basic cable. So what we did is we went to the cable company and we told them we wanted to have cable in every single unit. What kind of a deal could we get? And we got it for $15 a unit. And we turned around and gave it to the tenants at $40 a unit. So we saved them $10 and we made $25 a unit. And we got rid of all the dishes off the top of the roof.
Yeah, so you can sort of be your own utility company, too.
Right.
And how many units was that building?
81.
81-unit building. It what size building? I know it depends on the area and what services are offered, but how large a building do you have to be talking about to be your own utility company in any form?
It depends on how far you want to take it. There are also systems out there called RUBS, which is, I can't remember what the R stands for, but it's Utility Billback System. So you can even go in and they can individually meter the water, they can individually meter the gas, and you can pass that expense on to your tenant. One of the things that we know is that tenants will use less utilities if they're paying for them. So if we wanted to decrease our water bill even further, we could pass the expense on to the tenants and they would be more conservation-minded.
Imagine that. People pay for something or earn their own money for something and they become more conscientious.
Right.
You know, maybe that's why government doesn't work.
I'm sure that's why.
Absolutely. Okay, so what else should people know about the overall path of the investor concept?
Well, when you're ready to make that step, again, we talked about education. You want to make sure that you get educated before you go into something like this, because in commercial, there's a lot less safeguards in place like there is in residential. In residential, you've got a lot of government laws and acts and RESPA and things like that that are there to protect you. And in commercial, you don't have a lot of that. I highly recommend that you attend something like the Meet the Masters event that's coming up in March, or get yourself educated somehow. The other thing that you might want to do is you might want to look at teaming up with somebody who's already done it before. And that's one of the main reasons why we do syndications, where we'll put groups of investors together and we'll manage the property. But it's an education at the same time. It's like on-the-job training. So once you've been through one of those, you've been a part of a syndication. When it comes time for you to buy your own building, you have much more experience, much more knowledge, and you're going to be better at it, and your chance of success is going to be a lot greater.
And you know, Tim, I have to comment on that. I'm not crazy about syndications always as an investor, because sometimes I'm just kind of worried the manager is going to be a crook or skim too much money off the top. But I did enter into a few of those myself, and I did it with a company that's not around anymore, but I learned a lot of stuff. And basically what we did is I bought a portion of a couple different apartment buildings, larger complexes. These were, I don't remember the size, but 120 units. One was like 200 and something units. And what we did is we started fixing up each of the units, and we would re-tenant the units and go for rent increases in the area of like 30% and then resell the building. And they were profitable. It was nice. And I had a good experience. And I tell you, I learned a lot doing that.
Right.
It was really a good way. I've never owned a 270 unit building myself, but I got the inside track in seeing how that worked.
Sure.
And there's nothing like having my own money in the deal being at stake to bring a whole new level of attention to it.
Right. Yeah, and you do pay more attention to it when it's your own money that's on the line. And syndications are great for that. They're also great for people who want to own commercial real estate, but just aren't interested in learning how to do it or aren't interested in doing it themselves.
So from either perspective, that's a good point. From either perspective, if someone just wants to invest money and not have to worry about details, we take care of the details.
Sure.
If someone wants to invest money and get some real education so they can go out and do this on their own in the future, that's another good reason.
Right. It's good for people that either don't want to do it themselves, they feel they don't have the experience, perhaps they don't have enough money to take one down themselves.
Right. So here you can get in with maybe $50,000, $75,000, $100,000, whereas normally it might take you $600,000, $800,000, $1 million just for the down payment.
Right.
And you might be buying a $4 million property.
Right.
So, good point.
By teaming up, you can usually get a bigger property, sometimes a better property than you would be able to get on your own.
Better economy of scale.
Absolutely.
And you have someone else, the person setting up the syndication, who's out there really looking for deals and working their connections.
Right. Well, one of the things that makes transferring into multifamily is that it's very similar to residential in the fact that you're leasing a single unit to a single tenant, typically, versus, if you look at office space, you usually don't rent by the unit, it rents by the square footage. And it's just a little different way of calculating rent.
You know what? I just want to chime in on that one too, Tim. The office space thing, like office and retail properties, I find those to be really complex, especially office, I would say. Because on office space, you usually have to do the tenant improvements, which means the TIs, as it's called in the industry, building out the inside of the suite. And that gets really complicated. Office leases, I mean, I've rented several offices and I don't want to own one because I look at what my landlords go through. And, you know, these leases are 60, 70, 100 pages long sometimes. I mean, they're just insanely complex.
Yeah, and in an office, you know, if you're a landlord, it's all about the tenant, getting a good quality tenant in there because you want somebody that's going to stick around for a long time. You want somebody that's going to be a good quality tenant that pays their bills on time, that doesn't abuse your building. You know, that is, as a landlord, you're willing to give space to those types of tenants at a little lower rate than you would maybe somebody who's just starting a business and you don't know if they're going to be around in a year. The problem is knowing which tenant is which.
Right. And that's difficult.
Yes.
And usually there's no personal guarantee, at least on larger office deals. And so you've just got a corporation on the hook and they can just kind of walk away from the deal and close the business.
That's right. Well, one of the other things that I like about commercial is that there's no limit on the number of properties that you can own.
And what you're referring to is right now in the current climate, there really are some limits, some hard limits in terms of 4 to 10 mortgages you can have on residential properties.
Exactly.
A lot of our investors are buying them with cash after that,
mm-hmm.
or they're partnering up and finding another way to do it, or they're doing seller financing occasionally. That's pretty rare nowadays, too. But yeah, with commercial properties, you can really build an empire.
Sure. And the loans are a little bit different. You're likely going to experience full recourse loans. Most commercial lenders are going to have full recourse. And what that means is if you default on the loan, the banks are going to come after you for the deficiency. They're going to take your property back, they're going to sell it, and they're going to use that money to pay off their note. If there's still money to be paid off on the note, they're going to come after you for it. There are non-recourse loans. They're more difficult to find, and interest rates are a little bit higher. Now, another thing that you're going to find that's different in commercial lending is the terms of the loan. Sometimes they're 25 years, sometimes they're 30 years, but very rarely do you have a loan that has a 30-year term. Usually it'll be amortized over 30 years, but it may be due in 5 or in 7 or in 10, and then you have to renegotiate and get a new loan. The other thing is that with any real estate, I mean, management's going to be the key, but location and economics are also going to play a big role. You've got to find a place that has good economics because you're not going to be able to fix it. Even if you bought every building in town, on that part of town, you may not be able to fix bad economics.
Now, on the loans, I just want to talk about that for a moment. So let's maybe talk for a moment about deal sizes and how it relates to financing. So what we usually find is that there are two sort of segments of the commercial real estate investor population. There are institutional properties and individual properties.
Right.
So an individual investor might sort of bump up at the top of the individual market usually at around $3 to $4 million in purchase price.
Right.
And the deal sizes for the institutional investors is $4 million on up to unlimited zillions of dollars. And with that, you find that the financing really varies. And a lot of lenders will tell you that when it's a loan amount above $3 million. Mostly it's really the property qualifying by itself, pretty much,
right,
where the loan will actually, even though it's a larger loan amount, will become many times a non-recourse loan, whereas a smaller deal, the loan is recourse. Now, I can tell you my read on the logic for that from the bank's perspective is that if it's a $3 million loan and the bank were to suffer a loss and they resell the property and say they lose $1 million on the deal, they have to foreclose on the property, resell it, and their loss total is $1 million, for example. They can probably come after the investor for that, and maybe they can get it or some portion of that. But if it's a large amount of money, the investor's not going to be good for it anyway a lot of times. They're just going to declare bankruptcy, and it's going to be sort of a moot point to pursue the deficiency. So that's why it really becomes a thing of the property doing the qualifying when you get up into those higher numbers.
Right, right. And you're right about the numbers, too. I think that the best deals are the buildings that are under $4 million because you also don't have the competition from the institutional investors. As well as having loans, institutional loans, you usually get large companies that want to buy up the properties that are, you know, usually around $5 million and above. And then also what you said about the recourse is true, too. The smaller investors usually will have the money, but the larger investors, if you've got a $50 million loan and your building just got sold for $20 million and there's a $20 million deficiency, chances are the guy that took out the loan isn't coming up with $20 million. One of the other things that's different about the lending process and the purchasing process on commercial properties is you usually don't start with a contract. You start with what's called a letter of intent. And the letter of intent is kind of like an invitation to dance. You know, you go back and forth. You say, we're willing to buy your property under these conditions. There's the price and the terms and everything. And then they'll come back. They'll either accept it or they'll come back with changes. And you get all of the details worked out before you go to contract. I prefer it because it is just a much cleaner contract. There's not a lot of addendums or anything on it. And so you'll notice that that's one of the first things that's different about buying commercial property versus buying residential.
So good point there. All right, what else?
Well, I think that if you're considering making the jump from residential into commercial, search out somebody that's done it before. Get some education. If you want to let us know that you're interested in looking and being a part of those types of opportunities, just let us know. And when they become available, we'll let you know. We'll explain to you what we're doing and see if it's a fit. We can't talk about anything that we're doing currently. But yeah, if you let us know that it's something that you're interested in, we'll certainly contact you when the time comes.
And you can find out more information at our website or put your name in there and your information, and we will give you a call as we have properties come up. And that is commercialinvestingshow.com, commercialinvestingshow.com. Thanks for listening today and happy investing.
This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, all rights reserved. For distribution or publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media@hartmanmedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of Platinum Properties Investor Network, Inc., exclusively.